Hello, colleagues. What an honor to be here in beautiful Berlin, and as an American, what a thrill to be so close to a world leader who doesn't tweet. She just scowls. It's much better. But seriously, thank you so much, all of you, for coming. Thank you to Cord for this fabulous, fabulous honor, and also everyone else with Reporter Forum, especially Isabel, who I know made every bit of this happen. Thank you. And thank you to Alice for that impossibly empathetic introduction. It means a lot, truly. Most of all, I want to thank every wonderful German reporter who is here tonight for the hard work you do every single day. It is so inspiring for me to sit here and hear your stories and understand maybe 10% thanks to my friend Philip, who was dutifully translating. Thank you, Philip. One of the great pleasures of watching that movement Alice was just talking about unfold has been looking at the work of those journalists, people like you around the world. It's in no small part due to your hard work, due to a group of journalists who refuse to shut up, a group of journalists who bang their heads against the wall until the truth comes out, that we've seen this profound moment of cultural change from the United States to Germany and far beyond. We are seeing long-held secrets about the abuse of power dragged kicking and screaming into the spotlight. And we're learning a lot about powerful men who used sexual abuse as a form of control and a silencing mechanism. These were secrets that were protected for far too long. I know that hearing about someone the way they're introduced at an event like this, the way Alice introduced me in that extraordinarily generous talk that you just heard, it can all seem sort of neat, like it was all wrapped up with a ribbon on it, or this fabulous award, this trophy, was always sort of locked in my sights. But the truth is, how it looks after the work is done is very different from how it looks when you're in the thick of it. And I know any one of you hardworking reporters here tonight can attest to that. I'm still tackling tough stories as you are, so this means a lot. It's more than just an award. It's a form of validation for that work. And I'm grateful for any kind introduction, any award. But I also want to talk about how it feels before the moment of impact, just how different it is when you face nothing but challenges and questions about the work. And when every lifeline, every editor who stands behind a story, every publication who says, yes, we'll hit publish, is the make or break factor. I've talked a little bit publicly about some of the challenges that I faced reporting my stories on sexual violence, how systems commanded by some of those powerful men we've been talking about came crashing down on me too, and how people I trusted turned on me. And powerful forces in the media became instruments of suppression. I get asked about that story a lot, and fair enough, those vast systems are important. It's part of what kept the stories about sexual violence that some of you in this room have chipped away at secret for so long. There is complicity in our media. But there'll be time for that story later. What I want to talk about tonight is the more personal side that I think you'll all understand so well firsthand. A simpler part of the story, and one that without a doubt every reporter, as I've said, but also anyone in this room, whether you are a teacher or a doctor or a lawyer, has experienced some version of. The reality is, when I set out to break these stories, I was not an award-winning, celebrated reporter. I was a guy trying to do my job at a time when very few people believed in me or thought that I had any ability to do it. And I don't say that for any sympathy. I had had an incredible career, and I had done work I was proud of, which I don't take for granted. But the reality is my career was on the rocks as well. And as a result of tackling this story as doggedly as I did, it fell apart almost completely. There was a moment a little over a year ago when I didn't have any institutional support behind my reporting. my contract was ending with my news organization, and after I refused to stop conducting interviews on this, I didn't have a next contract. My book publisher at the time dropped me, refusing to look at a single page of a manuscript that I'd worked on for years and years. I found out another news outlet was racing to scoop me on the Weinstein story, and I knew that I was falling behind. I didn't even know if I'd be able to report that story at all, or if a year later, or a week later, the work would amount to anything. I didn't know if I was going to let down each and every one of those brave women who came forward as a source. As you heard, I had moved out of my home, I was being followed, I was being threatened. I faced personal legal threats from a very powerful and wealthy person who said he would use the best lawyers in my country to wipe me out financially and destroy my future. And if against all odds, I got through all of that and found a way to publish this story, I didn't know whether anyone would care. Maybe that's something that's familiar to the team who did such hard work on sexual violence reporting here. I spent a year in rooms with executives telling me this wasn't a story, that it just didn't matter. Because this was all before the extraordinary months of conversation we've seen this past year, and analysis, and activism, and acknowledgement that what these women were saying, that their suffering, mattered. I was sincerely at a moment when I had no idea what the right decision was or what the future would hold. And I wish I could tell you that in that moment, I was confident, that I was sure of myself, that I didn't care, or I said to hell with it. And I'm sure if there's ever a movie of those events, there'll be some actor who's much better looking than me who kind of like puts his shades down on his nose and says, "Over my dead body, I'll stop this reporting." And apparently based on that impression, he will be played by Clint Eastwood. You know, I could do worse. The real version of that, though, is I was in that scene, and I wanted to be confident, but I was really just scared. I was heartbroken, and I didn't know what to do. There were so many people in my ear at that time telling me I was making a mistake. And not all of them were cowardly or evil. Some of them were just being pragmatic. They were saying, "This isn't worth it. You are going to tell one story at the expense of so many other important stories." They were looking at what our culture would accept at that time and just making the judgment call. My boss is saying, "You have got to stop. You've got to let this go." My loved ones saying, "Is this really worth it?" Pointing out that I would risk my whole career for a story that might not even make a dent. And I seriously considered those perspectives because I felt, well, what do I know?